Hello and welcome to Roll for Topic, a roundtable discussion about topics related to running role-playing games. I'm Chris Salzman.
And I'm Andy Rao.
Andy, I think I've done that intro like 192 times or so at this point. At some point I need to do a supercut to see like how different they are.
Oh, fascinating. You've probably done it, if we count like bad takes, you've probably done it about 750
times. Yes. Well, we won't talk about that. That just goes into the memory hole. So let's see. So we were chatting before we jumped on, and you had mentioned that you had a kind of a surprise topic for us that we were just kind of do live on air. So I'm going to hand it just directly over to you, and you can take it away.
So first off, let's start, before we jump into the topic I had in mind, let's just do a quick update on where we are, because do I kind of correctly surmise that we've had a little bit of a light year as far as GMing goes?
Yeah.
Is that true for you? It's true for me.
Yeah. So this is by way of an explanation. So I was doing my taxes last week, you know, like the day before they were due.
Obviously.
Yeah, yeah. I think maybe even on the day. And I was going through all my taxes and stuff like, oh, I had three different jobs last year.
Right? Yes.
Yeah. So it's been a little hectic, to say the least. But I mean, things are nice and stable now. I'm very thankful for that and all that. But it's it's been recently been a little nuts.
Yeah. Well, I'm getting ready to kind of step back into the saddle of GM.
Oh, nice.
after it being pretty light for a while. So I had one kind of epic GMing experience earlier in this year when I did that weekend Lovecraft thing. And I've run like a short alien campaign that is still incomplete, by the way. So I'm feeling the pangs of GM guilt as I say that.
Yes, of course.
I still have to get one more, the final session on the schedule.
So
I am about to start GMing something, a game I have failed to run twice. And so here's hoping that third time is the charm. I'm getting ready to run Band of Blades again.
Oh, you are? That's great. Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
So I have a really checkered past with this game. I ran an online game that went for a while and I would say was quite successful, and it sort of fell apart due to, it's like someone moved out of the country and I tried again a couple of years later, and this time it fell apart because I'm a flaky GM.
Okay.
And I just find it difficult to remember to schedule games, and at a certain point momentum is just permanently lost, right? Yeah. And people have moved on with their precious free time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So those were both online attempts to run Band of Blades. I did learn a lot from each of them, even the short one. But this time I'm running it locally with some in-person people.
Yeah.
Which I am hoping is maybe the magic ingredient to help this game that I'm obsessed with, but also intimidated by and annoyed with. I'm hoping this will be the magic ingredient that makes it click.
So, yeah. Why are you obsessed with this game, right? Like this is like, I mean, you know, trying to run this three times, like there's something there that you clearly need to get out of it.
I mean, that's a great question. So I've never encountered a rule system like the Blades in the Dark system that powers Band of Blades that is more exciting and frustrating at the same time. And it's just a mix. It's a game. It is a game that has hundreds of pages of rigid procedures to follow. Mm-hmm. And yet it is also built 100% on judgment calls and off the cuff, quick GM judgments.
Yes. Yep.
And I find that really annoying sometimes, but I have come to really appreciate games that require you to wrestle with them to create the experience that you want to get out of them.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can, I mean, so arguably you do this with every RPG, of course. However, you pick up D&D and it tells you how to do everything. And that's great. It's a game. That's what game rules are supposed to do, right?
Mm-hmm.
But a game like Blades in the Dark or Band of Blades comes along and says, hey, here's this system you can use to resolve stuff. But what you want to resolve is going to be kind of up to you. And so here's like this toolkit. Use it to create the experience you want, right? do you want like a gritty, brutal, tense game that produces a certain type of encounter and a certain type of result? Use these tools to make it. Do you want something that's breezier and more heroic and has a totally different tone? You can do that too, but you'll have to get in there and adjust the dials yourself.
Yes.
I find that kind of irresistible as a game master. And I do think, you know, I have run games of Band of Blades where it was, everything was firing on all cylinders, and it did create an experience that was different than anything I'd had running games before. I've also run Band of Blades and I wanted to like hunt down the game designers in person and yell at them.
Yes,
right.
Yeah.
So to me, that makes me, I want to keep trying because there's something magic in there that like is genuinely special about this rule system. And I want to make it work because the glimpses I had when it was working were really, really good. Can you relate to that at all?
Oh, of course. Yeah. I mean, playing and running like Blades in the Dark, like that, the Forge in the Dark, system. Yeah. They're the only way I've found to make it work for me as a game master, is to like, there was a flow chart that was floating around. I think back on like the, the Google Plus days back when so there's this flow chart that was floating around. That was just like, here's how to like do a die roll. Right. And it was just like, here's all the different things that you have to think about that go into just sort of setting the position and the position and effect of like what's going to be the outcome of the die roll. Right. And just like, there's all this like complexity that you can kind of like squeeze in there and like people can kind of interact with like how many dice are going to get rolled and like stuff like that. And like, you just have all the stuff that can kind of culminate then in one single die roll that can really move the narrative forward the narrative is always going to move forward. Right. Like that's the one thing that I just love about that system. It's just like, yeah, like every time you roll, it's, you know, something changes in some fashion, right? Like that's the downside to, you know, a lot of like D20 systems, right? It's like, sometimes you just fail and like nothing happens. You just kind of move on to the next person.
Yeah.
That's never the case. Right. And so like, I'm with you, like that magic of, when Blades is just working really well, or like, you know, when Band of Blades is working really well, right? It's just like, it feels like you're just like free to imagine the story in the way that you want to do it. And like, you every once in a while have this interjection of like fate into it too. And like, there's something that's so alluring about that. Like, so I'm absolutely with you on that. And then I think for you, like from what I know about Band of Blades, like there's this really good, like overarching, like map and story that you're playing from sort of start to finish. And I can see that for Andy being like, that's the thing too, that just like, you know, grabs you. Yeah.
I know Band of Blades is not unique in this, but I am really drawn by a game that has an end point, a set end point. Like you can win or lose this game, unlike most RPGs.
Yes.
And so I've got a printout of the map. I'm going to put it on the table in front of my friends. And it's got like spaces you can move to. And when you get to the right side of the map, we're done playing this game.
Yeah.
And, we do a final roll of the dice to see if we won or not. Right.
Wow. That's
exciting and intimidating at the same time. So I guess we'll see how it goes.
Are you going to do anything like, I mean, well, obviously printing out the map itself is pretty cool. Are you going to do anything like clever with it on top of just putting it on the table? Like, so you mentioned like moving, you're always sort of moving through, right? Like you never get to go backwards.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Would you ever like consider doing, I don't know, this is like kind of cheesy, just my first thought of just like ripping the map up as they're progressing, right? Like you just got to tear away what's behind them.
So a little bit. So, you know, the idea of Band of Blades is that you're retreating in the face of this like inexorable Sauron style, you know, the hordes are, so you'll never, when you retreat, you will never move towards the left side of the map again.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's lost forever. Yeah. So I do actually love the idea of ripping up the map. That would be actually delightful to do in front of the players.
Yeah.
I was planning on, you know, bringing a Sharpie and like, here is, and coloring in the part of the map that you can no longer access anymore.
Yes.
Because that this is how far the enemy armies have advanced.
Yeah.
So I gotta think about the tearing up the map because that sounds pretty delightful. Yeah. So,
yeah, anyway. Tear it up or like burn it somehow.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't want to monologue too long about Band of Blades, but you'll certainly be hearing about my success or my very possibly my abject failure to run that game.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and you will try again if it, if it doesn't go, but yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, so I've had on my desk sort of off to my right, I've got this, you know, pile of books that I'm for sure I'm absolutely totally going to read someday.
But yeah. Oh, yes, of course.
Yeah. But, like close to the top of the pile is the Blades in the Dark, the Deep Cuts. Like,
oh, expansion. Yes. I'm very curious about that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I'm curious about it too. Like, is it's, it purports to sort of like add a bunch to it and kind of give a little bit more, more flavor to the setting, I think. And like, yeah, kind of explain stuff a little bit more about like, you know, so I just flipped through this, like to the advancement clocks, like giving a little bit more explanation about that.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that, which is like, I mean, I think that's where every time I play Blades, it feels slightly different. Right. Cause it's like, you know, you're focusing on different things, but like there's like all this depth with like the clock system too, that you can just really like, yeah, you can lean on, you know. I think the last time I played, you know, my character was like kind of a tinkerer. So like I was making, you know, kind of making these mechanical like bombs, but like, you know, mechanical things,
yes,
like sort of off on the side, right. As like sort of my downtime activity too. Right? It's so flavorful and it's so fun. Like, yeah. And like, I don't get that from other systems and I don't know why that is.
Yeah.
I think I think it both have this experience of like, once you get the clock idea sort of embedded in your head, you start bringing that into like every game, right? I'm just I just got to draw this thing. It's like, you know, you got to tick this up six times, you know, and we'll kind of figure out what that means. But it's just like, it's such a, there's so many interesting overlapping systems and like, it's hard to keep them all in your head at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Too. Man, I do truly think that the one thing that's going to stick in this hobby from the whole Apocalypse World inspired games is going to be the clock.
Yes,
right? Like what a simple no-brainer idea, but it like will revolutionize like the way you GM. So I'm really intrigued by that Deep Cuts book. I don't own it because I don't plan to run Blades in the Dark anytime soon. Mm-hmm. But I was pretty intrigued by it because correct me if I'm wrong, it's less a book of like, hey, here's like five new classes you can play, and it's more like, hey, the game has been out 5 years. Here's some stuff we've learned about how to work with this rule system. Am I correct in that?
There's two parts to it. So there's a setting part, which is sort of like, here's some new backgrounds and stuff like that. And
yeah.
then there's a part two, which is, yeah, the systems, right? So like, that's where I, you know, flip to the advancement stuff. So that does kind of like, yeah, just explain more about like, you know, like here's how to use this. Like, here's how to do stuff with, you know, teamwork. Here's how to do, you know, more stuff with your downtime, like all that sort of stuff, which I don't know. Like, I think it's the sort of stuff that I think when you start to run Blades in particular, like, okay, let me take a step back. It feels almost like the Dungeon Master's Guide, right? Like that, like it's the thing that you really shouldn't start with that. You can just kind of start with the Player's Handbook, right? And like in D&D, right? Yeah. And you can run the game just fine, just with basically that and like kind of a general understanding of like how to piece together a game. But like, this feels a little bit like that of like, okay, like I'm having this specific problem. Like now there's a book I can go to of like, okay, like I really want to make downtime more interesting. Like, give me a little bit more information.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, it is informed by years of people running the game and, you know, like themselves running the game and stuff. Yeah, I do find myself kind of interested in this kind of book, right? Because it's like, from a publisher standpoint, like what a terrible idea to greenlight, like a supplement of, you know, like an expansion to a game. But like, it's also like, it's such like a necessary like artifact, I think, to a game to have sort of that like follow-up.
Yeah.
Like my brain's going in a lot of different directions. I mean, the other thing I think about is like, if I was going to pick up like a trading card game, right? Like, so there's the Cyberpunk trading card game is currently being kickstarted right now. And it's like $10 billion or whatever, right? It's like the most successful thing in the world. And like, my first reaction to seeing that is like, what's the expansion that comes after that, right?
Yeah.
You're like, what sort of like, are people going to play this game, right? You know, like that sort of stuff. Anyway, so it's like the existence of a book like Deep Cuts for Blades in the Dark to me says that this is a game that's going to be around for a while, right? Because there's something there that kind of demands this sort of like iteration.
Yeah.
Because like all games need that iteration. I think it's the same way, like this is why D&D has so many different editions, right? So some people will just stick with the first one they ever played. But like that evolution is a good thing, and kind of like in a weird way, it's sort of a healthy thing. Maybe not for your wallet, but like it's a healthy thing.
Yeah, yes.
Yeah, for the hobby and for the game that you're playing too, to kind of like inform itself and to kind of like continue to evolve and codify those evolutions too here and there.
Yeah. So I will say I have a bunch of links bookmarked as I've been prepping this Band of Blades game. Mm-hmm. And the one I've gone back to the most is somebody's lengthy actual play report of a whole campaign that they ran from start to finish that they hated.
Yes.
They hated it. The players hated it. And I've gotten more insight from that write-up of like, this didn't work for us at all. And here's why. And here's the problem we kept running into. Mm-hmm. It's so helpful. And I don't know. You know, I sometimes feel like there's not, I don't know, I'm not as up as I used to be with, you know, the latest D&D book releases, but mm-hmm. I feel like, you know, there's this kind of marketing impulse that you always, your new stuff you're releasing should just add more stuff to whatever the game is, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, there's value in like, okay, D&D's been out for a decade. What have we learned?
Yeah.
What would we do differently? Like what are some things that ways we saw people using this system that caught us by surprise that mm-hmm. now seem like fantastic ideas that everyone should incorporate into their game?
Yeah.
Right? I would love to see a little bit more of that and a little bit less like, hey, there's four new barbarian subclasses
yeah.
in this book and 200 new magic items, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, like I think we've talked about before on the podcast, the like the examples of play section, you know, in yes. a lot of books, right? They'll have like a, you know, kind of a narrative focus like, oh, like, you know, like, okay, Susan and Jimmy sit down to play this game, right? And like, you know, so on Susan's first turn, she does this, right? Like, you know, kind of just yeah. like explains like that. Mm-hmm. It's always like kind of the platonic ideal of like what play should be. It would be fascinating if like, you know, Band of Blades had an expansion and they included that blog post that you're talking about. Like that yes. series of blog posts of just like, here's what went wrong. And like, maybe you have some running commentary on like the side of like, okay, well, like this may have went wrong because they didn't understand this rule or something. But it's like, having that like anti-example too, I think is really, really helpful.
Yeah.
Right. Cause it's like, I don't know, like, especially in like the D&D, there's like this meme in, I feel like I've seen this on the Reddit D&D forums. Like I don't spend a lot of time there, but like people uh-huh. often say that like bad D&D is worse than no D&D.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, and everybody like has these like really dramatic, like, you know, I've never had anything near this, like these really dramatic, like awful experiences playing D&D with people. And like, those are very instructive when you have those like, oh, that wasn't yes. what I wanted out of this. Like, why, you know, like why, what happened there? Right. It's not, you know, and like, hopefully you don't have that as your first experience and you're like, I'm never playing this again, right? You know, but like, yeah, later on you can have that like, okay, like this didn't work. Like, why didn't it work? Like, you know,
yeah.
What was it? Like, is it just the system doesn't connect with me, or, you know, was it the people, or like, yeah, whatever that is. Yeah, I'm curious, maybe if I can ask a probing question, right? So you've had sort of two attempts to run this. Like, do you have a specific couple things that you're going to do differently this time? Other than it being in person, right? I think that's a pretty huge, huge change.
It's more that I have an awareness of where the pain points were last time. Like if there were an obvious fix for them, I would make the fix.
Yeah, yeah.
I am hoping that the in-person stuff. So a weakness of online gaming is this sort of collaborative storytelling that these games really require to fire on all cylinders is hard. Right.
Yes.
Because like we've all been there. You say something, there's like, you know, five people on the Zoom call just stare blankly and there's like 15 seconds of silence. You know, mm-hmm. that doesn't happen in real life. In real life, that would be too awkward. So I am hoping that we get a little bit more of that player prompted, like, mm-hmm. well, what if we did this? Or what if we tried this? Or how about using this rule in this particular way? So
yeah,
I will say you know, one of the challenges of Band of Blades is that tension between let the story unfurl as it will in a totally unplanned manner at the table versus prepare carefully for what you want to have happen in the next game night.
Yes.
That's just like a tension. There's like, I think different GMs will land on different sides of that. I'm I am someone who probably works best when the story is unfurling with no planning.
Yeah.
But I am my neurotic personality needs the comfort of having done a ton of preparation before I arrive at game night. So I don't know. I am putting a lot of weight on in-person, maybe cracking the code here. And maybe it will, maybe it won't, but maybe, you know, in the spirit of games that don't work are instructive experiences and even fun ones that we can learn from.
Yeah.
I hope that, you know, give me a month or two here to get this campaign going, but I hope you'll ask me like, hey, did your Blades game fall apart? Can we talk about it? You know, hopefully I'll be able to chat about it. So
yeah. No, I don't think anything will be too traumatic there, but yeah, I mean, there's a lot to be learned there. It's interesting. The campaigns that I play in, right. So the gaming group that I'm with, you know, we've been meeting for forever and like, you know, we keep trying new stuff, which is great. You know, like we're currently playing a game. You know, it's, I think we're what, a year or so into it or so. But yeah, it's like, I don't know exactly where I'm going with this. It's like, I haven't had the experience. Like I've definitely had the experience, but I haven't had the experience of like a game sort of falling apart in a while. Like part of me is like, oh, like maybe I need to try to run something that is maybe, you know, like has that, that chance almost to fall apart. Yeah, because like I don't know, I think that's like that's also where you kind of maybe arrive at like a more interesting game that you're setting up, right? Because it's not like, okay, like so for me, like I like running one shots, and I think honestly part of the reason I like doing one shots is because there isn't a lot of pressure on, oh, like I've got to continue this story, right? Or maybe it'll fall apart, right? So like in part it's a little bit of a cover for my own anxieties of like, okay,
well, yeah, if I when can, you it's say
just,
hey,
just one session, you know, that's fine.
We're just then, trying this out, we'll test it out. It takes a lot of that like pressure of like, if it goes bad, you have an obvious scapegoat.
Yes, yeah. But like there's so much fun I think to be had where that you have this kind of this arc happening, right? You know, whatever you know you're gonna play for a year or two or three or whatever in this system, or like you've got 10 sessions planned for Band of Blades, right? It's like, I think that there's like something that can, that's really interesting that can happen there too. Like, even for like the players, right? Like they can kind of get to know the characters a little bit better too, both who they're playing and like who the other characters are at the table as well. Like the game I'm playing in right now, like we have, Matt, my GM, just like mentioned at the end, like, hey, next session you guys are going to a masquerade party, so like think about what you want your costume to be. It's so, like, we're
amazing,
everybody's just like thinking about like, oh, like what's it gonna like, what are we gonna do, you
know?
All that, like I haven't quite decided, but like, you know, Mark, one of our other players, had like a really good suggestion for me, you know, that sort of stuff. Like that doesn't happen when you do a one shot, right? Like
yeah.
And I think I'm excited for you to try this in person and see sort of like what can emerge from there. Over the course of it.
So I have one other thing I wanted to throw out at you, but first a really quick question. A couple of episodes ago, or maybe like a year ago, I have no sense of time anymore. You were thinking about talking to your GM about like respecting your character.
Yeah, there's a couple.
Do you want to, did that conversation happen? How did that work?
Oh yeah. So we ended up having it on Discord a little bit. He was just like, yeah, sure. If you have it. Which I mean, I expected, right. But yeah, so I'm waiting for a good like narrative beat for when we have the right downtime to make it make sense to like kind of figure that out. So I don't know. It's like the game that we're playing, it feels like there's never a moment to take a breath, which is good, right? Cause it feels like we're constantly kind of expending our resources and stuff. So yeah, I'm hopeful. We're about to enter this big festival in Middenheim. So if you're familiar with the Warhammer fantasy universe, it's like, one of the big cities out there. So like there's this festival that's about to kick off, and I mean, nothing is going to go well. Like there's political unrest, religious unrest, you know, there's, you know, cults running around, there's, you know, all sorts of stuff. And like, security for the, for Middenheim is like, you know, freaked out. Like they don't have enough people. It's like, it's the perfect time for us to go to a masquerade ball.
It's a perfect situation to throw a group of PCs into.
I love it.
Light all the matches and catch everything. All right. So, hey, I had one other thing I wanted to throw at you. GMing related.
Yeah.
And maybe this doesn't have a, we don't have to talk forever about this, but So I have a son who has 14-year-old me would their jaw would drop at this. My son has a D&D class at his school. Oh my
God. Yes. Yeah. You mentioned this. This is so cool. Yeah.
So like the final half hour of most weekdays at his school, he plays in a D&D campaign. They're playing playing D&D 5e through the Descent into Avernus published.
Yeah.
So their final exam in this class is preparing and running like a week's worth of a campaign that they have created and built.
Oh, cool.
So I've been working with my son about it's fascinating. I've been asking him what the other players are doing. And I think it's kind of like, just bring to the table whatever you want.
Yeah. Yeah.
To just run something for us. And it's funny because like my son's adventure he's creating is very much like grounded in the campaign they're already doing. Yeah, it's like, this would fit into the city of Baldur's Gate where we already are. And and someone else is like on a planet where it's like half water and half desert, like but so I've just learned something. I have never used a random dungeon generator.
And in fact, I
rarely use any kind of random table at all. Mm-hmm. Like occasionally I've used some, but I've certainly never built like an adventuring space with a random dungeon adventuring tool, which are in like a lot of the D&D dungeon master guides.
Yeah.
And I am a person who is like, well, think plot wise, what is this location you'll be at? Yep. And then I like, am like, what makes sense for this to be there? And I kind of create the thing based on the fiction.
Yeah.
My son hits a brick wall when I ask him questions like, what's the story? What are they doing here? What do they want to accomplish? But he is on fire when he can roll on a table that's like, that gives him the dungeon layout that he can then fill in all of the details. My son needs to roll on the table that's like the next part of the dungeon is a corridor that goes 30 feet forward and then turns left for 20 feet.
Yeah.
Like that, I would have said that's like anathema to my GM prep style.
Yeah.
And I've always skipped over that part in any game that has it. But it's just been a wonderful experience to see, like, okay, first of all, I see why this is in the rule book. Because for some people, this is what sets their imagination on fire.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just curious if you have ever, have you ever turned to that page in the Dungeon Master's Guide and created a dungeon by rolling on a couple of subsequent tables of like, what size room is it? What's in the room? That sort of thing.
No, I mean, yeah, I think I'm with you. That doesn't really appeal to me. But I don't see why not. Right? You know, it's like if it's cleverly done, like, I mean, it sounds good. I mean, to me, that feels more like a board game, I think. And there's like a mental shift for me of like a certain amount of like intent, like authorial intent almost of like, oh, like, I mean, for this to feel pure to me, like I need to sort of draw it out myself or whatever,
yeah.
Or, you know, use sort of a map that's been drawn by, by a blessed creative team, something like that. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I will use those random tables for like encounters and magic items and stuff like that. Cause I find that fun. Like, and I don't try to hide it. Like sometimes I'll write it myself. Sometimes I'll just be like, oh, hey, like in the book, like, you know, we've got, you know, there's 100 magic items. Let's just roll to see which one you get. Like,
yes,
sort of stuff. But yeah, that's interesting. So he rolls on that to kind of get the shape of the dungeon. And then does he manipulate it then from there? Like add story stuff or what? Yeah.
So there's a lot of detail I won't go into about my son. He mostly sticks with what he rolled.
Yeah.
So just to briefly simplify this, so his adventure he's creating, it's like a wizard's mansion.
Nice.
And then there's like a dungeon level underneath it.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so there is a book. It's called, I'll just plug it here. It's called Into the Cess and Citadel, which is a book about running urban campaigns in role playing games. It's like system neutral.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's like two pages in that, 300-page book that are about like randomly generating a building.
Yeah.
And you do it by like you create the layout of your building by just like putting some rolling some D6s and then putting them into a pleasing shape in front on the table in front of you. And then whichever face of each die is pointing up, you just check the table to see, oh, this is a bedroom. This is a laboratory, wow. You know,
yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
So we went through that process and he just used that as rolled. And then we turned to the 5E 2014 5E DMG to build a dungeon underneath where, and that's where you roll like, okay, this corridor extends for 50 feet.
Yeah.
Now there's a big circular shaped room. Now there's, you know, and, he was fine using those layouts as is. And then he took over and is like, okay, what monsters are we going to put in here?
Yeah.
What are the details of the rooms that are cool?
Yeah.
But I do think we all need like something to get us started. For him, it's like, I can't come up with a layout by myself. I can do everything else by myself. Mm-hmm. Give me the layout. So like for him, getting the layout was what he needed. I suspect we all have something that like we need help getting over some initial hurdle and then we can take it from there. But it's going to be different for all of us, like what that hurdle is that we have to get over. Right. So
it's totally, totally true. Yeah. Yeah. This is I'm taking a wood carving class, on the side. So like, this is like, you know, carving wood with like gouges and chisels and stuff like that. But my teacher, he's been doing this for 50 years. Like he's semi-retired, but he can't stop. He said to something last week that really stuck out to me. He's like, and like, this is something that I believe in. He's like, you know, the more disciplined you can be about the craft and like, you know, the little parts about it, like, you know, like you got to kind of do the work, you know, do all that sort of discipline stuff, you know, sharpen and, you know, draw stuff out and stuff. It's like the more freedom you end up having. Right. And I think like, I think that's true in basically every creative pursuit that I've ever been involved in. But I mean, having it said so clear is like, oh, yep, that's exactly what's happening. But I wonder if there's something to that too. I think for, you know, like a young GM trying to figure stuff out, or even, you know, like, or even, you know, someone who's been around the block too, right? Like having that discipline of like whatever that is, right? Of just like, okay, maybe I need a little bit of a framework here. And then that framework then sets me free to, you know, add the monsters, tweak stuff, whatever that is, like that. Like that's not it is like everybody approaches it from sort of a different standpoint, too. And like, so it's wonderful. I mean, I think that probably is the reason why the DMG is so long. And like, you know, we have all these books and stuff is because everybody sort of needs something a little bit different for, for them to be successful.
Absolutely. And why it's so difficult to say what should be in the GM, right? Or the DMG, I mean. No.
Yeah.
So I have a memory. I didn't enjoy being in eighth grade. I mean, who does?
Yeah,
I didn't. And I had a super jerk eighth grade teacher. And to this day, I remember an experience once where, whatever it was, towards the end of the day, he was like, it was like the art section of the day. And we all got a big blob of like clay or Play-Doh put in front of us.
Yeah.
And he was like, everyone has to make something by the end of this period. I'm going to walk around at the end of this.
Yeah.
You can make whatever you want. And so at the end of that 45 minutes, I had gone through like 12 things that I thought were terrible and I had smushed up again. I had nothing. I had an amorphous blob of clay. What I needed was for someone at the beginning of that to say, make a person,
yes,
make a, you make a like, horse. Make a, yeah. a structure. Yeah. I would have spent 45 minutes making a really intensely cool whatever that was. Mm-hmm. But that was my hurdle. I needed some kind of like boundaries or limit drawn. And that was it can be a freeing thing to be told, here's the limits, the boundaries around your art or your thing that you're making, right? So I guess all that to say, it was fun after, I don't know, 40 years of owning the Dungeon Master's Guide to discover that there is like a use in here that I will never be able to really appreciate, but that is here for a reason because other people are inspired by it. So that was kind of neat. And it also made me feel, you know, I'm, I'm the sort of tedious gamer that complains about what Wizards is doing right or wrong all the time. But it is a little bit of a humbling experience to be like, okay, this was wrong for me. I don't need this section of the DMG. I don't need this 20 pages. But for somebody else, this is what actually helps them be a successful GM. And so who am I to critique that, right?
Oh, I love that. That's great. Yeah.
So cool. Anyway, that's it. Yeah. And I think we probably both got a run here. So yep. do you want to wrap us up?
Yep. Yeah. Thanks. It was a good conversation. Yeah. I appreciate you bringing a couple of good topics to talk about. And I will for sure be asking you about the Band of Blades thing.
Yeah. I am already regretting that I asked you. I know.
You put yourself on blast there. But yeah. Yes. Cool. All right. Well, that does it for us. You can always catch Andy over on his other podcast, Zombie Strains, with John Corey. It is great. Yeah, go take a listen. And I think that is it. So I've been Chris Salzman.
I've been Andy Rao.
Remember, if your player's having fun, you're a great GM.